Title of the message is, "Oh no, not with that person." Gonna be a read from Mark 2, 13 through 17. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large group came to him and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were the Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners."
That is good news for me.
Amen. I agree. So I'll give a little bit of pretext to the reading, and then I'll go a little bit more into the message and then come back to it again. What was considered to be tax collectors and sinners, and the reason that the teachers of the law, the Pharisees, didn't like them. The tax collectors were people who were Jewish people who were collecting the Roman tax. So they were seen as traitors to the Jewish faith, and they were not liked. And so they had and then they would charge for collection. So you would, you know, it'd be like going to get your income tax done, and then you have to pay to have your income tax done, and on and on. So it was a similar thing. And they didn't like that. And they were considered as to being, you know, less than what the righteous people of the law. And the sinners were everybody else that weren't purified by the law and didn't follow the Jewish law. That's basically who all the sinners were. So the only ones that were considered to be righteous were those who followed the law. And that's 613 laws that they followed. There's purification laws. There's women were basically, you were just out of luck, pretty much. It was basically a man's world, and that's how it was. And so,
and their names didn't even get in the scriptures in most cases.
Right. So it wasn't, and then Jesus said that, well, the people who claim to be righteous, why do I need to come for them? I come for the people who are sinners and the tax collectors and the people of lesser that, you know, need help and need salvation. The righteous won't recognize that they need salvation anyway because they're already right with God. So they're not going to listen to nobody. And that model, even kind of today as we move along, is still alive today. There are those who think they are righteous and chosen and they're going to heaven, and the rest of us are not. And that principle is alive and well even today, and it has never gone away. And so we're going to look into a little bit of where the idea of sin came from, the origin of sin eventually. What is the first thing we see when we meet people? I almost said this out here at Sunday school class, but I thought I'd wait till I got in here. So what is the first thing we see when we look at a person's face? I have two studies. One was done by Harvard, and another one was done by a news agency over in Australia. And they both say, whether we like it or not, we see gender and race. That is the first two things we see. And that is hardwired into us. We notice that first two things. What we do with that information next gets passed on to another part of the brain. So the good news is that we can consciously change and override that process once it leaves the initial part of the brain. But your first thing that you're going to notice about anybody is their gender and race. And you are hardwired to do that. And a lot of things, as if you study the psychology or the makeup of the brain, there is a certain degree of hardwiredness in which how we are. We are a certain way. And it is hard to change that. We have a tendency to stereotype people immediately. And in order to override that, you have to work at it. It's not an easy thing. And unfortunately, a lot of people never bother to override it, and they develop more and more, and then you have the diversity or the struggles we have in our society. It seems to me, in some ways, that we are created sinners. If in fact we are hardwired in a certain way, our minds and our makeup and how we are, either through genes or what have you, as they are finding, there are certain things in which there's nothing we can do about it. We are made a certain way. And so we are hardwired in some respects to be created as a sinner. So I want to look at a little bit at some of the ideas of where the origin of sin. And believe it or not, there's very little written about it. We have the after effects of it, and wow, it is present, but the origin of it is not necessarily written really, really that much. No matter what book you read, of the Bible or spiritual books of any kind, most dealing with the human existence is that we are in some ways fallen in some ways. We are a mixture of two things. The Eastern philosophy kind of sees it as a karmic effect. They see it a little bit different than what we do. And they deal with it in a way also, a little bit different than what Christianity does. But they still deal with the idea that humans have they deal with in karma and what have you in a very different way. I have always wondered, and I should say always for many years, why a loving God would create a humanity in such a sinful way. Why would a loving God say to us, create this human existence in which we have, which is good. I don't want anybody thinking that I don't appreciate life. I do. There's many good things. But we have to deal at some time with the idea of evil, and which is bad. And we all know that exists. This duality exists. So why would a loving God create a humanity as a sinner and then make a plan of salvation for them? Is this simply one person? I mean, we understand a lot of times in a lot of theology, there's God as one person with a white beard who sits up there and does his thing, and which I don't agree with, but nevertheless, that's a general consensus of a lot of conservative thought. But why would this person do that? Or this heavenly being do that? I understand the plan of salvation, and I appreciate it. I am very thankful that God, in his great wisdom through the coming of Jesus Christ, and that he has given to us a plan in which we are going to be saved through forgiveness, grace, and mercy. I'm a forgiveness, grace, and mercy person. I'm not a judgment person. I think equality. Forget the judgment and the justice. I think we need to move to forgiveness, grace, and mercy, and equality. If, as many arguments say, in which I have listened to some this week, in a more conservative ideology, various different kinds of it, not only evangelical, but there's others who, within the Christian faith that are conservative, say free will. That because of free will, because we are free will agents, we get to choose whether or not we sin or not. I don't believe that either. Yes?
Wasn't Adam and Eve and then Cain and Abel the partner's sin?
We'll get to that.
That's what I was going to say. God told them not to eat that fruit, but Adam let himself be tempted by that person of the other gender.
Well, it was Eve. Or it was a woman. Eve doesn't come till later. So are you saying that women are the problem?
Yeah. That's
no. We're jumping ahead just a little bit. We'll get there in a minute. You're a little jumpy. So we'll get back to free will. So concepts and theology is built around, or the sin is built around, free will. You have the freedom to choose, and because you have sinned, you have chosen to do that. I do not accept that at all. I believe that we have the freedom to choose, and out of them choices, they hold us captive as we make choices. We are held captive by the choices we make. So if I made choices here, then I have a set of more, I have more choices. And some of what lies in front of me may not be good choices at all. They may be a series of, you know, bad or worse choices. My will is not free to the point where I can go leap bounds over, as we were talking out here, Jeannie, that I can't change my race just because out of free will, or I can't change my sexuality out of free will. I just don't believe that. I think genetics have a lot to do with it. And as I've said many times, genetics have about 90% to do with who you are. And thus you are hardwired in some degree to be that way. And the idea of a loving God coming down and giving us ways to live, to change that, to live in a different way, that's tough to do. If you're going to tell me that women are the cause of evil and the fall of humanity, I'm going to say baloney. I don't buy that for a minute. I think that's a gross misunderstanding of the text. Again, there has been, I'll get back to that in a second. Again, there has been very little written about the origin of sin in humanity. The intertestamental period has focused a little bit on it, on Genesis 3 and Genesis 6, 1 through 4. Genesis 3 has to do with the fall and the serpent and all that. And Genesis 6, 1 through 4 has to deal with the Nephilim, who had relations with the women of the earth, and thus evil came into the world. Satan and the development of demons came around that time, or got developed too. Paul wrote that sin came through Adam, but he didn't say it started through Adam. He said it came through, but it didn't start there. The question in Genesis, in which I want to look at, which Genesis 1:26, it is the first creation story as we know it. There's actually two, or one is a continuation. It all depends on how you want to read the creation story. Genesis 1:26 says, "And then God said, 'Let us make mankind after our image, in our likeness, and they will rule over and over and over and on and on.'" I have never had anybody explain to me what "let us" means. Not "let us" like you eat, but "let us make man in our image." I believe in a hierarchy, a huge hierarchy in the heavens. And we are one little speck along the way. I'll get to a little more details in a second. And I believe that there are such as angels, there are sons of God, there are various different layers along the way. And goes up and up and goes off into infinity. The idea that God comes to a single point, as I said before, is not a biblical concept at all. You should see God as getting more infinite, bigger and bigger, beyond which we cannot understand. The definition, I think, of Anstrom, who says that God is beyond anything that I can understand. So God, at the level of what you understand things, God is beyond that. So no matter how much you think you understand, God is beyond that. So it's an infinite beyond. But yet, the idea of a son of God or sons of God is in the Bible. It's in various different texts along the way. I'm not going to try to argue whether or not they're sons of God. If you want to do, look, type in Google Sons of God and you'll get various different texts that refers to it. No one has said to me what let us mean means. I believe that that means there was a multitude of gods, small, maybe small letter G gods. There's different terms that you can use that made man. We were made, and what was happening in the second story was that they took earth and fused into it a living soul that came from God. This living soul, this entity that makes eternal existence possible, was fused into matter, and thus the beginning of sin. This is where I think sin happened. This was not supposed to happen. Well, it maybe it was supposed to happen or not supposed to happen. I know I can't say one way or the other. It did happen. So I can't really say one way or another. I'm happy it did, because that way we're all existing. Otherwise, we won't exist. But in the conflict of fusing these two together, sin has happened. Sin began. Because ever since then, there has been this arc between matter and spirituality, and thus sin. It says that Genesis 1:31, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. He didn't say it was perfect, nor did he say it was eternal. He just said it was good. Now, you think of how many times you use the word good. I finish a project and I say, well, that was good. I did a good job. But I know that there's problems with it. I know that it's going to have to be rebuilt. You know, I can say I overhauled an engine or I built whatever, and I say, that was a good job. But eventually, it's only going to last so long. It's good, though. It's very good. I think these beings created a very good reality in which we live. It's true. But yet, sin started in the process.
Hebrew or Greek? In Greek, probably there's gender to the nouns. In Hebrew, there's also gender to nouns. However, what you're saying, I don't know that Judaism started out monotheistic.
It didn't.
I think you're absolutely right on target.
Right. It didn't.
I got distracted back at verse 27 when God created man, and I liked when you said mankind or humanity in his own image, and of course we're using the masculine pronoun his for God, and then in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them.
Right.
And so if humanity was created in God's image, we always use the masculine pronoun for God, but God created male and female in God's own image. So I got distracted by reading verse 27 and thinking about, what's God's gender then?
God has no gender.
But we always, in English, we don't have a pronoun for that concept.
Right, we don't.
It's got to be he or she.
And we don't want to say it, because that, so we say it's a he.
That seems like not human.
But I think in the Hebrew text, correct me if I'm wrong, and even in the New Testament, we saw God as a man. I think it, as a male figure, because in those days, males ruled had over top of the family, and a lot of the stories, or most of the stories in the Bible, are to illustrate a spiritual concept. So we have this.
And you mentioned the picture we have of God because of Michelangelo's painting and the Sistine.
Many things along the way. We see God as a man sitting up on a throne with a long white beard. And I don't think that's a biblical idea. I think God reaches off into this infinity. We are constrained by language. That is our problem.
Yes.
And
including language for gender.
Yes. And it creates a problem. I like this. I like to say you have to hydrate the scripture. You have to add living water to the scripture so it comes alive and becomes more. This is a very condensed version of a lot of things. And so you have to hydrate it and grow it. That's where growth and all this comes in. And you have to make it grow. Literalists would have a big problem with what I'm saying. And literalists, along with free will people, want to have control of what you think, so therefore they can judge you. It's about judgment. You look into their theology. I'm not interested in judging anybody. And I don't think the Bible is necessarily, Jesus is not about that either. Jesus is about forgiveness, grace, and mercy. So, so humanity was created. Sin was created in the idea of forging, like I said, living a living Holy Spirit or a living breath into, because the story says he forms a man out of clay and breathed into him. And this has been the conflict ever since. How do I deal with the fall then, with women? And the idea that woman, which has been so prominent down through time, for thousands of years, they have, you said that, I want to make a comment on what you said, about the Jewish people or the Israelite people not being monotheistic in the beginning. Not until after Babylon did they become monotheistic, when they rebuilt the temple for the second time. That's where I understand the idea when they started reinforcing the idea of monotheism. And from that point on, then it was. But before then, they recognized other gods. That was a recognized, you can read that in the text. So how do I deal with women and the idea that the most general idea of thought is that woman went and ate from the tree, ate that apple, and thus we're all cursed. First of all, there's no apple. And second of all, I don't think that it was referring to woman at all. Because Eve is not named until after they leave the garden. That is, to say that Eve ate from the tree, that is non-biblical. It just says woman. That's it. Doesn't give no name. I see woman here as wisdom, as I have said many times. Wisdom was trying to elevate herself. I will add the gender herself, because wisdom is seen as she, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, was trying to elevate herself and make a bargain and try to rise above what she was. And she got kicked down. We suffer because of lack of wisdom. Basically, that's what we suffer from. If we had wisdom and knowledge, we could do a lot better. We suffer from that. If you follow through the story of what women did within the Bible, you will see that when it comes to the tomb, who was the first to come to the tomb? Yes, the women were coming to finish the burial service, but when you spiritualize the concept, it was wisdom who was definitely interested in her reclaiming her position. I see it that way. I see it that wisdom was most definitely concerned about the resurrection of Jesus, and she would take her rightful place, and she was to go to tell the disciples that Christ has risen. She once again took her spot and where she was. The argument over humanity is written in many texts. Not only in the Bible, the argument of whether or not humanity should be saved or not is not just a biblical idea. As we read in the text today, the Pharisees, or I think it was the Pharisees, only thought themselves as being righteous, and therefore they were the only ones that were going to be saved. The argument goes back to Abraham's time in the land of Ur, or the Sumerians. Not the Sumerians, the Sumers. I'll say it that way. The Sumers wrote, it's the oldest writings we have that are written down. And they wrote in their stories about the fight for humanity. There was some gods who wanted to destroy them and others who wanted to save them. And that idea flows through various different ideas and spiritual writings. It's in the Bible. Who gets saved and who don't get saved? The argument of who saves humanity and who does not. Jesus, in my estimate, is all about saving the world. I must add also in that text, and it was the reason, the creation of the human was that they took was it they took an animal or they made clay? Yeah.
They took a little being that was here, so I'm going to say kind of.
It could be either way. And they elevated them up, and the idea was that they were coming here from another place, which is biblical too. There's angels that come here from someplace else we don't know. How many stories do we hear around the world about beings who came from the sky, who came down here on earth? It is a biblical idea. We just don't look at it very well. We seem to be so narrowly focused on certain things in the Bible, and the rest of it we don't want to listen to. We don't want to look at. So the idea of beings coming from some other place is in the Bible. Where did the angels come from? Jesus left his heavenly abode. Where is that? Yes.
Well, the History Channel has all kinds of things coming from us.
Aliens. Yeah. I mean, we argue over terminology. When you start looking at some of these ideas and you generalize the ideas, the themes of the idea, it just boils down to terminology. It's as simple as that. I know churches in which you have to say it a certain way, and that's it. You can't vary, no way, no how. I'm talking about little words. As for this, this is where we're at. The world, we who think don't understand that a lot of part of the world is still not where we're at. It's just the way it is. They're not open-minded. I don't have any problem with aliens and that whole scenario, not at all. It's just a different way of calling angels, whatever. You have Easter Island, you have all kinds of things in this earth that cannot be explained. Yes, Connie.
But if there were a multitude of gods, and I believe that because look at all of the languages or the different religions they put together, at the same time, there are so many worlds out there, who's to say they didn't try other experiments?
Greek mythology. I mean, we chuckle at it as in the Christian realm, we say, oh, yeah, baloney. I'm not sure that they don't have a very good idea and very good concepts, which we should incorporate. We should incorporate some of these things into our Christian faith. If we're going to move forward in our Christian faith and grow to be a universal idea, we have to start incorporating different ideas. We can't be so narrowly focused on the little ideas of the Bible. We have to grow them. We should be able to articulate our ideas to a person who is a ufologist or a person who believes in UFOs. We should be able to articulate a person who is a chemist, a physicist, or whatever. We should be able to articulate our points of view in various different settings in the terminology in which they are familiar with. If you're going to be a good teacher, you should be able to do that. And if you're stuck on one, that person has to say this terminology, don't bother to be a teacher. That's what I say. You have to be very flexible, and if you want to grow humanity in a positive way. The argument, as I said, we still argue over who's going to be saved, and that's what was basically going on in this text this morning. That's what I want to take from this text. The argument of why did Jesus not affiliate with the people that are going to heaven already? They're righteous. Why doesn't a righteous leader come simply associate with the people that are righteous? Jesus said, no. I come to save those that are lost, the lost sheep. On and on and on it goes. We are them people. We are the people that, by grace, God is, through Jesus Christ, is coming down and saved. Jesus came from there, wherever that is, another universe, or wherever. I believe it's, like I said, the tree of life. That is a another universe in my idea. That's a biblical idea in Genesis. And it says there's other trees in this garden. So there's other realities in which it exists. We just don't look at it in that way. We want to control. We need to just open up and relax and allow the Spirit to move. Let our idea be one of many. It's different. It's good. There's strength in good. There's many hairs in a rope. It's not one single hair. It takes many hairs to make a big, thick rope with strength. It takes each one of us thinking differently and coming together and say, yeah, yeah, that's a good idea, yeah. The strength of your spiritual thought, the spirit of coming together. I will conclude by this. Does anybody else have any comments? I will once again come back to Romans 11, where Paul, in his anguish of a writing of who is going to be saved, he's trying to save his Gentile people and trying to save his Jewish friends. He threw up his hands and says, God has bound us all over for disobedience so that he can have mercy on us all. And that, I really, that's one of my many, but yes.
I'm not into science fiction whatsoever. Know nothing about it, have no interest in it. But I do like the term, the Force. Or is that the right term?
In Star Wars.
Yeah, and that gets away from the sexist terminology about what God is or isn't, and it emphasizes action rather than leveraging.
John makes that point very well, that what Jesus says, he says that Jesus said he's going to send the Spirit so that it will guide us into all truth. And I think your point is very well taken. We need to listen to that Spirit. We don't necessarily need to worry about seeing God up there on the throne somewhere, but we need to listen to that Spirit, that force that guides us through our life. And that, if we do that, we're doing well. Forget about the idea that we're seeing this God in a white beard up there somewhere. Learn to live your life listening, I think. And so your point is well taken, Bob. Any other comments?
Just a quick question. You're talking about the early Hebrews being polytheistic. It reminded me of Thomas Daniel's The Gifts of the Jews. I didn't realize that he had a follow-up book about before and after Jesus. Does anybody have that book? Okay. I'll check in the library.
They weren't. I don't know if they were necessarily I can't say that word, polytheists. Yes. They were accepting and recognized that other gods.
Archaeology shows that there were, God had a wife.
Yeah.
Yahweh had a wife. And that comes to, you and I have had that conversation
yes.
before about Yahweh. So.
Yeah. So that's a better way of understanding God as being mother and father,
right?
And rather than just man. And I think you're right. That has been written out by various different means, and I think that they've done a great disservice when they did that. But if you really look in the Bible, there is this mother or she that lives through the Bible, for sure.
Gnostic writings took
it up again. And that was after Jesus went, Gnosticism came. But it was declared a heresy by the Catholic Church. I am very interested in the first 300 years of the Christian faith. Do I agree with everything that was said? No. But I think they were very healthily arguing. If they could have communicated together, there would have been a very healthy argument. And I think Christianity would have maybe went someplace else other than where it is today. Because the Catholic Church necked it in and took control of it. And then this is what we have. Yeah. I always say these books are still around. We should be able to read. You can read them if you want to, if you're really interested. So, yes, Dan.
Do you really believe in Adam and Eve, or do you think it was just a way to put start?
I think it's a story that illustrates the beginning of man. It has a spiritual idea. I don't necessarily have to have an Adam and an Eve.
Not necessarily two people.
No, I don't necessarily have to have that. Because Eve doesn't come in until after they leave the garden on the way out.
But there was always a female.
There was always a female in there because the text wrote man in there, meaning humanity, and not just female or male. So after he created male and female, so whenever he said man, it meant humanity or male and female. That's how I see it. But that is not necessarily written into the text real plain. So it's a struggle. I mean, this is where we're at in Christianity. I mean, believe it or not, we're trying to do something different up in the college, and we're going to probably get some resistance in doing it. We're trying to make a spiritual center in which people who think differently can come and worship no matter what. And we're in the process of trying to do this. Rather than call it a Protestant ministry, we're looking at calling it a spiritual center. And believe it or not, we are going to get, just in the title spiritual center, we are going to get resistance from the conservatives just for the use of that word. And that's where we're at. And that's just where we're struggling. Anybody else? Amen.
thank you for the many gifts you've given to each one of us. Help us to use these gifts in an appropriate way. Help us to reach out to others with the love that you've shown to us. We return a portion of these blessings that you bestowed to us. Please help us to use these gifts to bring healing.